her ongoing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life forms and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Buck Benny, a two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. I am here with my friend Matt. Just Bob could not make it today. Neither could just Jim. So we have just Matt and me. But it'll be good. We are into some exciting episodes of all of our series that we're going to cover today, but broken up. And this first one we're going to talk about is Discovery and where we're at. We're on episode number 11. If we remember, on episode 10, they had entered the mirror universe piece from the original Star Trek with the Empire. And the Tilly had, they figured out that she was the captain of the ship in this mirror universe, and so they got her decked out to be able to talk to them and things, and there was some funny bits and some great pieces of it. We also found out that that the doctor, that Ash looked like he was probably a Klingon that had his body shortened and things, and his bones and things manipulated. And so when the doctor found that out, he was not going to let Ash go anywhere and do anything until he figured more of this out. And then Ash snapped the doctor's neck at that point and killed the doctor, which was a huge surprise and a huge piece that we get. Matt, since you weren't on with us last week, was that a huge surprise to you? Did that what did you think about that whole scene? For Bob, it really struck him when we were talking about it.
Yeah, that was pretty shocking to me. Not the reveal so much. I mean, that was surprising. I didn't see it going in that direction.
Right.
I thought it was going to be a whole PTSD storyline kind of thing.
Yes.
It was going to continue with him being an issue. Just to give him some more character depth by, you know, giving him a kind of a traumatic experience kind of thing. Yeah, and then I really liked the character that died too, so I thought that was it was just very sudden and boom, there you go.
The only thing I'll say, I mean, there's good and there's bad to it, I guess, in a way. One, it keeps you on your toes as far as thinking to yourself, oh man, anything can happen to any character on this mm-hmm. series, right? And we'd already talked about that multiple times throughout the series, and it felt that way already, and this really cemented it in. Two, the downside of it to me is it plays into the trope of so often when you see a couple, a gay couple together in television or in movies, that it's either takes place right after one of them has died or left, so you don't really see the couple together, right? Or they kill off one of the part of the couple, and it just feels like they're doing that, not in this case, but in normal cases, because they don't want to present that relationship. They just want to present one half of that relationship, and I don't know, I guess a sad homosexual is more interesting than a couple of happy homosexuals. I don't know, but that's just kind of it seems like that kind of has permeated for years of that whole trope. And I think that's unfortunate that they got into that trope probably by accident, because they were just thinking, oh, this would be, again, cementing the fact that anything can happen to any of our characters. But that was unfortunate that piece of it. Have you noticed that trope in other shows and things, or not so much?
I'm trying to think of some other examples, but nothing's popping into my head right away.
I can just think of there was a show about a gay man that was played by the actor in The Odd Couple, the one that played Felix Unger. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But it was a series in maybe the 80s or 90s, and a short-run series. But at the beginning of it, they kind of established that he's gay, and he's looking at pictures of his long-lost love who died maybe a few months before that or a couple years before that. And, of course, you never see that side of it because they apparently don't want to show that side of things, so they just kind of played it in the background. But so often that's the case, or it's somebody's gay uncle that you never see the other half of the couple. Certainly Married with, not Married with Children, Modern Family has portrayed a gay couple that stayed together and we got to follow them. So it's just interesting how that all plays out. And certainly that's something that's been brought up online by folks. Some folks hate the fact that they even have a gay couple on the show, and other folks hate the fact that they killed off one of the gay couple, right? It just depends on where you come from. And for me, I'm okay with it either way, just for the fact that, again, like I say, the good side is it cements in that you never know where you stand with this show. Then that brings us pretty much to the current episode, which is the second episode in this arc of the Mirror Universe. And we'll get into this. And the whole Mirror Universe kind of is interesting because it kind of flips all of this, you never know what's going to happen and who could die, on its head, because you never know who's going to come back, right, is how the Mirror Universe plays out, that there's people that have died that are on this series of episodes that come back as their doppelganger from the Mirror Universe. The first I think the first one we ran into, or at least one of the main ones we ran into the last episode, was I can't remember what his name is, but he was the one who came down to see Burnham as the ship's getting attacked in the second episode, and he's holding his head and he's trying to get to the med area, and she's like, well, you're in the wrong place. This is the brig, because I'm in the brig. And you need to go and get medical attention and head over to sick bay. And right as he's going, okay, I'll do that, the whole deck blows out and he gets blown out of the space and dies. And that's, of course, the last we see of him. But then in last week's episode, he comes on and he's the captain of the previous ship that she was on. And she had been the captain, Michael Burnham, before that. And so she decides, well, if she goes back, she can take back over the captainship of the ship. And that's the whole thing that plays out. And she ends up killing him and in the elevator as he attacks her, pushes his body out, falls down in front of the bridge crew, and the bridge crew start clapping because they see that is a dramatic way to kill the person and show in this barbaric universe that you are now captain of the ship. Did that scene strike you as interesting or anything for you, Matt?
One thing that jumped out to me. So I think we talked the other day about how these Star Trek episodes, both this and Lower Decks, when they make references back to things from previous series, I've been enjoying also going back and watching some of those things from previous series. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the moments where it jumped out at me watching the original Mirror Mirror, how much they mirrored certain moments from the other show. And this was one of them, because there's the same kind of moment in Mirror Mirror where there's a assassination attempt on the captain in an elevator.
Right. Right.
So that was one of those kind of callbacks that, and I enjoy stuff like that. I always like seeing, and there were several
from the other angle. This is from the other, from the other one. It's Captain Kirk. Our universe is Captain Kirk, who is the captain of the ship that's getting attacked by, is it Sulu and the folks that attack Kirk in the elevator?
I think it was Chekhov attacks him at one point as well.
Yeah. But anyway, they're trying to work their way up in command, the command structure, by killing him off because he made a choice that I think it's said in that episode that he spared somebody that he should have killed. And so the Empire would be looking down on him at that point. And so if someone was to kill him off, they wouldn't get blamed for anything because he made a bad decision and then he got killed off. So then they had the perfect time to assassinate Kirk at that point. And it's funny how it's the reverse, because this is her stepping up in rank to captainship by killing the current captain of the ship. So it's a mirror of the mirror universe episode.
And the other thing, I mean, the heart of this episode involves her with having the same struggle as Kirk, trying to justify not destroying a planet.
Yes.
It was interesting seeing her working through the same problem.
By her, are you saying which character are you saying?
Burnham as the
Burnham. Okay.
She's now the captain, having to.
Tilly has that same issue, right? Tilly is, they're wondering why she's not more aggressively doing things, and she's like, oh, well, my ship's having some technical difficulties. And then she has the captain, the real captain, Captain Lorca, come and talk to them, but as the playing the spot, the engineer. And that is one of the funny scenes, in that Lorca adopts essentially kind of a Scottish
accent.
Yeah, exactly. When he's responding back to them, a nod to Scotty, of course. And it's really, to have that serious character do something that's humorous really stands out. And so I thought that was a memorable piece of the episode, last week's episode as well. And then, like you say, Burnham, they both, everybody that's not part of the Empire, not evil, our people in our universe, have to deal with, we've got to look tough enough that they accept us for the character we are supposed to be. On the other hand, we don't really want to kill everybody we run into, so we need to figure out a way to not kill people and still look like we belong here and not get ourselves killed in the process, which is a tricky thing.
What's funny is I feel like, you know, Kirk was so noble and, you know, I'm going to do everything to not kill any of these people, even the awful ones. And Burnham, kind of the same way. I mean, she's really trying to preserve as much life as possible, and then the actual captain Lorca is just kind of, you know, as Kirk is like, no, we can't kill anybody, we can't kill anybody, we can't kill anybody, and Lorca's like, nah, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Because
Lorca pretty well. Yeah.
And his justification, of course, is that they're going to save trillions of lives in their own galaxy by getting back.
The epitome of the ends justify the means, right? On almost all occasions, right?
Right, and I think that's a very interesting driving thing for a Starfleet captain.
Yes, yes.
Because so many Starfleet captains, I mean, it's almost, I mean, I feel it's a little more gritty and real than some previous handlings, because they always seem to find like the magic solution that lets them do everything, that lets the very real, I mean, it's a, they always have to come up with the most creative, tough solution, which is, it's always interesting to see how they work out a problem in that way. But at the same time, it's a lot more real that, you know, there's not always an ideal solution.
Yes.
Because, you know, your Kirks and Picards always found that magical solution to the problem where they get to have everything.
Yep.
They get to
Kirk talks the computer into blowing itself up or whatever, and everybody lives happily ever after, right? On every side. Kirk makes some, does something that you think is going to be a negative effect on some culture or whatever, but actually helps culture, helps the ship, solves the problem. And yeah, and there's no messy pieces to it at all. People don't die. That, it looks like they might die. And the exact same thing with Picard, like you're saying, I agree. With Lorca, it's like, well, got to break a few eggs, you know. can't make an omelet.
And I certainly feel, I mean, I know there's some Discovery hate from fans of the older iterations of Star Trek. And it doesn't have that same, you know, optimistic, everything's going to be great in the future vibe that a lot of previous Star Trek does. Where and I know that was Roddenberry's original vision, was this kind of utopian future. And yeah, there's still problems, but we can fix them with reason and science and mm-hmm. and being good to people, which is a wonderful ideal. Yeah, it'd be great if that was our future, but it's just a different take on the same universe, and it's certainly a different take on a Starfleet captain that one has been given because he gets stuff done. He kind of reminds he's kind of Jack Bauer in space kind of thing, where
yes,
the ends justify the means. It's not always going to be a pretty solution, but I'm gonna get stuff done, and it's. He's the guy doing stuff that off the books, off to the side that, the people in charge might not want to see see how the sausage gets made,
yes.
But they're enjoying the sausage.
Well, and they put him in charge of their biggest program to try and solve this problem of the Klingon war with them. And essentially, yeah, are saying, we know you get results. We don't, necessarily agree with the way you do them, but we're going to do a hands off. You do whatever you want, but we just need to win this war. And that completely gives him carte blanche. He feels to do whatever by any means necessary. He's going to pull this off. I mean, we see that in the very first, his first appearance in the second episode of this series. With Burnham, and the fact that Burnham is constantly resisting him, like, I'm supposed to be going to jail, and I'm, why do you keep using me? What's going on? And he's like, essentially, you're an important piece to this whole puzzle, and you will.
And I can do whatever I want.
I can do it right, and it doesn't matter. I've been given carte blanche to do whatever I want, and I think you are a unique individual who can make my odds of success of beating the Klingons go up. And so I am going to use you until I decide not to, essentially. And at one point he's saying, whether you like it or not, you're going to be here and you're going to help us. And eventually, of course, she comes around to helping and realizing she can have an impact and so forth. But it's just interesting, all the people's points of view in this series. You've got her that is essentially being dragged into this thing for her abilities. And as she naturally lets her abilities go, show, she is integral in making the whole thing work. You've got Lorca, who they've given free rein to make it by any means necessary. You've got Saru and Tilly that I think both represent probably what's best in Starfleet, the Starfleet sort of mantra of peaceful existence, of everything that is great about Star Trek is embodied in those two characters. And then you've got Stamets that's completely coming from the outside point of view, like a scientist coming in and saying, I'm not really interested in Starfleet. I just want to do the things that the experiments and things that I want to do.
I'm here because this benefit is the best from science. Then
that's okay. What was that?
I'm here because this is where the best science is, and I don't really care about this war or.
Which puts half of the group that we watch in this series being non-regular Starfleet characters that we're used to. They all have half of them have motivations that are different than we're used to seeing in Starfleet, and half of them have pretty much what we're used to in Starfleet. Certainly Saru and Tilly could fit fine on Next Generation's Enterprise with Picard. I think Burnham, I think Stamets, I think Lorca would have a real hard time fitting on Picard's ship. I think they would get kicked off very quickly, or we've seen characters like them on Next Generation where they are essentially the bad guy because of what they're doing. And like you say, Picard finds some way to solve the problem that doesn't have to be the way that they're figuring out how to do it, right? And showing that they're wrong for pursuing the avenue they were pursuing. In this case, there is no Picard. In this case, it has to be done a messy way, and these characters are willing to do that. So it to me heightens the interest of this series, makes it completely different from all the previous series, and I think is brilliant writing in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I find it, I mean, the longer they stay in the Mirror Universe, I think the harder it would be for them to blend in.
Yes.
But I do feel, you know, there's so many more opportunities. I mean, as the story goes on and gets more complex, and they're not trying to hold back and let's keep to our ship and keep, I mean, they're aggressively, because they're trying to find their way home, and the only way they think they can do it is by going into this, you know, going right into the heart of things. They're putting,
which is interesting. I mean, the whole mirror, the original episode, it's sort of, okay, let's try to do this subtly, and we might have to, you know, let's try and help people along the way and things, but we're really playing on the down low. In this case, they decide that their solution has to be, like you say, completely aggressive, completely out there, take over another ship in the process. I mean, that is some crazy stuff that they decide to do. Their plan is nuts, but they're like, well, it's the best plan we can come up with, and I don't know what else we're going to do to get home. So,
and they've not shown it yet, and maybe they will, but I feel like there would be so many opportunities by doing the things they're doing for, you know, some random conversation tipping people off to, like, what's wrong with you? Why don't you remember the 3 years we spent together on that other ship? Or, you know, hey, remember that time we went to that bar on Andor,
yeah,
or something.
We saw Luke. That was great. It was
Andor,
great.
Not Endor.
Oh, but yeah, and all they can really do is go, which is kind of in tune with the character, and they embody this, because it's the same thing I would do. Is I would just go with the whole, we don't have time to talk about small talk like that. We've got to go do this thing. Let's go do this. You know, you always not answer the question and make it seem like they're just wasting time, which you don't do in this universe. Everything's got to be, we've got to go attack these people. Get off my bridge. You know, this sort of thing. You can't, you're sunk if you start getting into the minutiae of, oh yeah, I remember that.
Which I think works for a while, but in reality, the longer that happens, the more
correct
your behavior becomes questionable or whatever.
And that's why they have to proceed, like, really quickly, I would think. Yeah.
But I do feel like a crew like this, with the people that are willing to bend rules, break rules, burn the rule book, in the captain's case, those people are, to me, are far more likely to blend in the society and last longer than Riker would have or something.
Agreed. And it's interesting. And you can see Tilly has a hard time sort of managing it, but she pulls it off. But I think it seems to come a lot easier to Lorca and to Burnham.
Well, and those are the two that are really integrating.
It makes complete sense. Yeah.
Because Tilly is with her crew on the Discovery.
Yes.
So she's not she's not one of the ones living in the depth of the society day to day.
Right. But and in fact, yeah, I love how when they get over here, Lorca's, I mean, Burnham's part is more or less, okay, I just got to seem rough and tough, even with Lorca. And Lorca's part is, Well, I got to go in this. I got to be tortured, essentially, and allow myself to be tortured.
Got to get stuck in an agonizer booth.
Oh, this is whose plan was this? God,
you're looking. Wait, was this my idea?
It's my idea, and I go over here. First thing they do is want to throw me in an agonizer booth. But it was that callback was nice too. The agonizer booth that was essentially not changed too much from the original series, really. Anyway, we should probably get into this week's episode because we sort of are covering both episodes somewhat. But from this week, can you give us a little summary of what's going on in this episode?
Yeah, so this episode, I guess it kind of gets to the heart of the same sort of conundrum that Kirk was in of having to destroy a planet. In this case, not necessarily a peaceful planet, but one that she was, you know, that as Captain Burnham was trying to fight that same fight and come up with a way to not destroy this society. And in this case, the society was the Rebel Alliance, basically. Not to make another Star Wars reference, but it's the collection of various other cultures that are fighting against the Terran Empire. They found one of their bases.
Of course, isn't it Klingons, Romulans, and
Andorians, right?
Andorians, right. Okay.
So so they are going to meet with one of the resistance leaders because they found a base and she's trying to preserve the, that's another callback to a previous version that was in there. There is a Vulcan mind meld revealing information about the mirror universe, about our universe. That's how one of the that comes up as it did in the original.
Yes.
So that was kind of an interesting joke. But that's the heart of the episode is the meeting with the rebels and trying to find a way to kind of subtly help make this universe possibly a better place.
And we find out more revelations about Ash is a big part of this episode as well, because Ash is down there. And so is we know that he was a Klingon. Now we know exactly which Klingon he was, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was part of the reveal, and that's like we said, that's when he kills the doctor. That's when the doctor revealed that, oh, we think they did some experiments, and that maybe you are, you know, they've turned you from human into part Klingon.
Right.
Was kind of the doctor's take, and he's like, well, we can't have. Right. That knowledge out there, so you die now.
Yeah.
So clearly, yeah, there's something. He's been highly traumatized, and we're not quite sure at this point what is wrong with him. That is, you know, there is a big reveal for him about his character in this episode.
Right. Yeah. And we can go ahead, since in the spoilers, we're going to go ahead and tell you that reveal so we can talk about it. But the reveal is essentially that he is the albino Klingon Voke shows up in this episode with the, of course, mirror version of him. And we find out that he is Ash, correct?
Yeah. So,
and Ash is based on Voke. What I think is really interesting as far as just behind the scenes stuff is that the actor that plays Ash has always played Voke from the very beginning. And so it was kind of cool that they actually had the actor that's playing Voke throughout the series be Ash, who is the other, version of Voke. And it's neat that he can play both characters and does a good job. I never, ever would connected that these two people were the same actor. Cause I mean, that would be the problem by doing this. You don't want people early on to go, wait a minute, that's the same actor that plays Voke. So they do it differently enough. And of course, caked under all that makeup and prosthetics and everything, you cannot tell that that is the actor.
Well, that certainly helped because I just learned that fact like just now from you.
Yeah.
I had no idea that that was the same actor.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. And I thought he just did a really good impersonation of the voice of Volk when he
does a really good impersonation. He almost sounds like he is Volk. I don't know. Well,
at one moment he speaks, you know, when he's speaking Klingon and he sounds just like Volk. I'm like, oh, that's pretty good.
They didn't have to do any other voice work with him. He just simply jumped into his Volk character. Yeah.
Great. So that was kind of a surprise. I thought we were going with more, and we've talked about this before. I thought it was just going to be more a prolonged PTSD storyline.
Right.
Kind of with Ash and his character.
Well, that's what I love about that. That is the epitome of Star Trek, or at least this version of Star Trek, but I think also other Star Trek, is you've got to take something like PTSD and not just present it as PTSD. There's got to be a science fiction twist on it. And the twist on this is it looks like PTSD, but in reality, the guy's also got this personality thing that he's fighting in reality because he's got this Ash overlay on top of Volk, who he truly is Volk, right? And now there's got to be that kind of battle between the Ash and the Volk personality pieces. So, which makes it much more science fiction-y than just PTSD. But it's neat that they can reference PTSD in the process. So I love that.
Yeah, so overall, it was, we've been talking about this, we're in the heart now of some really phenomenal storytelling.
Yes, to me, I told Matt earlier, I really think from the episode right before this, right before the whole mirror storyline that we're in now, the mirror universe one, that last Klingon episode, big battle episode with lots of reveals and things that tie back to the pilot, that's sort of the temporary ending sort of the Klingon storyline or big pieces of it. And then all of a sudden we jump in this new adventure that was completely unexpected, at least to me. And I think to most people, I mean, they definitely were some seeds planted before this that they were talking about multi-universes and all that kind of stuff somewhat throughout. But then,
I mean, I was certainly expecting some kind of, cause you can't have this wonderful technology. I mean, they've had transporters for a long time and we were joking the other day about how many episodes are based on transporter errors.
Yes.
You know, so something even more complex of, oh, we can teleport our ship across the galaxy instead of flying it across the galaxy. That's got to go wrong at some point.
And it did. And taxing your guy to do whatever it was, 114 jumps, and then we'll just do one more. Okay, we'll do one. I love that scene. I love that whole piece.
That whole just one more jump and then I'm done. It was like, it's a bit of a trope, but you know, this last one and then I'm out, and then that last one goes terribly. It's by, how many heist movies, like, this is my last job and then I'm out. That's
yes, it is a wonderful and horrible trope that they grabbed onto. But
if you take tropes exist because there's a certain element to them. If they're done well, that's fun. The problem is when they're not done well,
right?
That they play into, you know, like, take this trope and do something interesting.
Well, in this case, they kind of have fun with it. They kind of are like, wink, wink to the audience. We know this is a trope. And so we're going to, the whole thing, that whole conversation between Stamets and Lorca, and Lorca never asks him to do the jump, but he's like, oh yeah, we'll warp over. We'll just warp back. You've done enough. We're just going to warp back. It'll just take us a few days to get there. Oh no, I can do one more jump. It's okay. I can get us there in seconds. So I should do one more. Well, if you really think you want to, you know, I don't know, you know, this has been tough on you. No, I can do that. It's just hilarious little conversation where you completely see Lorca's manipulative abilities to their on 10, and Stamets just, who's weak already, just kind of going, oh, yeah, okay, I'll do that. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right,
I'll probably be fine. One more. I mean, I did 114. One more. What's one more? And then, of course, everything falls apart, and now we have Stamets. I mean, we really haven't talked about it too much. We have Stamets that's essentially comatose and comes out of it just long enough to warn his friend right before he's going to die, but then dies. Yeah, and then of course, so I said that was like the start of this arc, and it was a great, and it just takes the whole series. I was talking to Matt about it. It's kind of like being on a roller coaster, and you've been on this ride. It's going to be lurching upwards and forwards, and it's been a fun ride and all, but now you're to the main thrust of the ride where you're really starting to go up and down and all around, and you're like, oh, this is the best ride ever. And that's sort of where you are at this point of the season. I think between that last Klingon episode, the first of the of these mirror episodes, this second that we watched this time of the mirror episodes, I mean, this is awesome. This is fun. It's both fun, interesting, lots of payoffs for things, lots of characters coming back, and this episode also, of course, which we'll get into here soon, or we might get into now, I don't know, brings back a character callback that I remember in our early conversations. Oh my gosh, they killed the captain and we'll never see her. And this is so bizarre that there's a character that we kind of liked in the first two episodes or became to like and gets killed off and we'll never see her again. And as they're saying that, Jim and myself are like, sure. but we'll get to her in a minute. But anyway, Jim, anything else before we get to her, or should we just jump into her?
Oh, so we're doing spoilers now? Is that how this works?
Yeah, we'll do spoilers because we're assuming they've seen the episode by the time they're listening to this. If you listen to us before you watch the episode, probably not the best thing. Probably the best thing is to watch the episode and then listen to us as a recap or as
okay. All right.
We've always kind of done it this way. Cause I mean, you, and
it's way more fun to talk about the episode. I know as the other half of your podcast, I guess, is the radio show stuff. And so we tend to do previews of those.
Correct. So we can't really
I've been trying to preview without actually, but yeah, that was, so I was particularly disappointed when they killed off the captain at the beginning, because I like the actress a lot. I just, yes. I've always enjoyed her work and
seen her in a lot of things.
They thought she was a good character and, oh, cool. That's fun. She's the captain. But like I said, I think the tip off to me that something that she might not be there for the long term was like, oh, she's a special guest star. Yeah. In the credits. I'm like, huh, that doesn't bode well for her character. And then of course
it did not. Yes.
Did not. So yeah, it was cool seeing her come back. And
yes. So anyway, essentially, just so we're telling everybody as we're going, this is, of course, like we said, huge spoilers on this thing. They talk about in the first episode and throughout this episode about the Emperor and who the Emperor is and all of that sort of thing. And all of a sudden there she is. It's Michelle Yeoh, who played the captain in the first two episodes in this mirror universe, is the Emperor in charge of the whole empire. And we get a chance to see her. I can't remember, because of course, I don't know if Matt's going to remember this very much. It's hard because we watched the next episode, at least part of the next episode as well. I think she just, it's essentially just a reveal right at the end, isn't it? That we see her and maybe she has a few lines of dialogue, but she's not in any, it's not a huge scene with her or anything, is it?
No, it's kind of the cliffhanger or big reveal.
Yes.
Roll the credits moment.
Kind of like when we find out Picard is Lorca and you just see him at the end of the episode.
Exactly.
And it's like, oh my gosh, Picard's Lorca, and this, and he's been Borgized. And then see you guys next season. What's lovely in this case is not see you next season. It's we'll see you next episode to do the rest of this. So, but go ahead. You were saying something.
I said he pulls off his Scooby-Doo style rubber mask and reveals himself as the villain.
Yeah. Essentially, yes. And getting her back, I was just excited when I saw her that she was coming back. Because I like the actress so much. And then on top of it, I was thinking, oh, this plays, it just, where it kind of washes over you, like, I get it now. Because you were playing her in those first two episodes. She is the epitome of a Starfleet captain, kind of by the book, but with a heart of gold and the whole thing. So Not so by the book that she's boring. I mean, they did a really good job with her in those first two episodes. Well, now she shows up in the Mirror Universe as the Emperor, and you're like, okay, now they can really unleash her acting ability and go the other way. How evil is she gonna? Are people in the Mirror Universe like a true mirror of themselves? And is this gonna be like ultra evil? Character instead of course what she played in the first two episodes, and we don't really 100% know that in this episode yet, because she just appears right at the end. But man, what a great reveal! Probably, I mean, to me, the best reveal of any character twist or anything of the entire series so far. Probably, would you?
Yeah, I assumed we were going to see her again, just because they brought so many people back from previous episodes. I was not expecting that she was necessarily going to be the Emperor. that was a bit of a
exact, but it wasn't. It was so funny because it was a surprise, and yet you go, "Oh, that makes complete sense." If I was writing this, this would be the ultimate way to write it, and so you're like, "Oh yeah, oh yeah." The only other person I could see do that could have been maybe the admiral, the woman admiral that is lover or whatever, yeah. Lorca has a past with Lorca, could have shown up there and it would have been interesting as well. But I think this was even better. Well, that's a question too. I can't remember. Have we run into the admiral over here or no? I don't think she's had a part in this Mirror Universe, has she?
No, not that I've seen.
And for all I know, maybe they could have said that she's dead. I mean, they did go through some people that have died in this universe, and so who knows. But then the other side, I was going to, the other character we haven't talked about that comes back in the Mirror Universe is the security guard, the security officer, the main security officer that's in, that we see in episode, hang on, 3 and 4. We see her in 3. I really like her in 3. They really work on her character and things in 3. And then in 4, she dies. So we haven't seen her since then, of course. And then to have her in these episodes, it reminds me again, I like that actress. I like the way what she brings to the part. And so seeing her in these episodes is a cool thing too. I can't remember. I think she comes back in this episode that we watched now. I don't think she came back in the first one, did she? Or do you know?
No, I think it's in this one.
And then I think she's featured in this one, and I want to say probably in the next one as well. I can't remember, but so it's cool to have her back at least for a while, and we'll see how that goes. But now, I guess, anything else you want to mention about this episode, or should we just talk about the whole episode and what we liked about it or whatever. So any other pieces we left out that they need to know?
No,
I don't think so. So let's talk about that then. The story, what do you think's part one, part two of this arc so far that we've gotten into? Is there one you like more than the other? Do you think they're both pretty equal to each other? What are you thinking?
So I'm trying to think of the parts, like I said, I've gotten sucked in where I was trying to watch it week
to week. Well, let me help you a little bit here, because I think you're going to be in the same opinion I am. I would say they're equal to each other. I would say they go together so well. Like you say, it's hard to talk about one without the other, or the other, you know, because in your brain, it's sort of just one storyline that kind of goes through both. And I would, because Best of Both Worlds, which I've mentioned before, you definitely can feel, for me, the first part is far superior to the second part, but the second part is still good. And so it makes it be one of the most memorable episodes in Star Trek history. But in this case, part one and part two are equally good. In my opinion, I enjoy them both tremendously and have a hard time even differentiating. I would just say it's like a 2-hour piece. And then we shall see if next week, if the third part holds up to these two, right?
Yeah. So I've got ahead of where we were I started, because like I said, the episodes have gotten good enough that I've been watching them back to back.
Yes.
And leapt ahead of, I was trying to watch them week to week as we were discussing them.
Yes.
And then kind of got sucked into, well, I gotta see what's going on next and what's next and what's next.
Yes. Yes. I have a hard time believing someone that's watching these episodes and enjoying them could watch the first part of this Mirror Universe without going to the second part. And it's hard to stop at the second. I mean, it has the little, they don't say to be continued or anything, but man, it's close to that. And you just kind of go, I got to watch the next one. So I really think most people that watch this first Mirror Universe one probably watch the second and third in one sitting, because it's just hard to stop. But anyway, go ahead.
But yeah, the whole, these have been two of my favorite episodes of Discovery back to back these last couple weeks. Said the wrapping up of that Klingon storyline, just that whole, the whole finale of that episode was terrific. And then moving into, oh, hey, we're in as soon as they referenced the Terran Empire, I'm like, oh my gosh, I loved that episode of Star Trek when I was a kid. This is so cool. They're doing this again. And so, yeah, it's been, That has been fun. And then seeing, like I said, in just this first episode that's fully inside the Mirror Universe, seeing some of the callbacks to some of the same conundrums and things that they had. I was never a huge, I never really got into Star Trek Enterprise, but apparently they did an arc in the Mirror Universe as well. And it kind of makes me want to go watch that, that bit of storyline too.
Yeah, I believe, I'm trying to remember, I certainly did watch that, or at least parts of it. I think it's a fairly well done piece as well. So yeah, certainly worth going back to Enterprise. What's nice now, of course, whether it's CBS All Access, I know they're on CBS All Access, but I think they're also on Netflix, all the Star Trek series and Prime, and probably Hulu too, I don't know. So they seem to be kind of everywhere. I assume eventually they might just all live on CBS All Access and not be on these other places. So it's easy for people to access them. So yeah, there's episodes of that I would probably watch for sure. And then kind of a tangent piece, pocket episode that feels like it has ties into this is from Next Generation. The episode where they do the same sort of thing where they bring back a character that's died. Tasha Yar shows up in the third season episode of Star Trek. I can't remember the title. I think it might be titled Enterprise C, but it's about the Enterprise C anyway. And it's not a mirror. They don't go to the Mirror Universe, but they go, there's like a accident that creates an alternate timeline for their universe, which is a lot like the Empire sort of thing. They get different uniforms and the whole thing. And it's a great episode. For trivia people, if you watch that episode with Tasha Yar from the third season, whatever it's called, Enterprise scene, whatever it is. Anyway, the very, very last scene, they're on the regular Enterprise. They've fixed everything. Everything's back to normal. It is in 10 forward. There's Geordi sitting there talking to some of the character. And there was a a costume mistake, because if you look at Geordi's sleeves of his uniform, they are from the alternate universe, because they have little black cuffs that they put on them for the alternate universe to signify the difference between the two universes. The rest of the uniform is the correct uniform, but it's just kind of funny that he's got those on there. It kind of reminds me of like Twilight Zone episodes where they go into an alternate piece and little pieces of that alternate would follow them back. I mean, in the very first episode of Twilight Zone, can't remember the name, Where Is Everybody? It's called Where Is Everybody? And he goes and he's in this world where everybody's disappeared. He's the only person left. And he ends up going to a movie by himself and pretends, he goes up and says, "Oh, I'll let myself in and I'll go ahead and get my ticket and rip my ticket in half and put it in my pocket to go in and watch the movie." And then they leave that alone, right? And then at the very end, I think he wakes up or whatever, he's back in normal reality, and this has all been a dream, I think it was. But then he reaches in his pocket, and of course he still has the ticket from the dream, which shouldn't be possible, right? And so I think inadvertently on Star Trek they created a similar sort of strange loop thing where he shouldn't be able to possibly be in that other uniform from the other universe, but he is. But I think it's just simply,
well, it's funny. You know, that's the kind of thing. And if the internet had been nearly as huge then as it is now, that would have been discussed endlessly.
Yes.
In the weeks after that, as far as what does this mean? What are they foreshadowing? And I mean, it seems like clearly it was just a costuming mistake.
Yes.
Because they never did anything with it. Nope. Down the road, but it's the kind of thing that, you know, nerds today would discuss. Just there'd be a month of discussion about when's this going to come back and what does this mean for.
And does this mean Geordi has memories of, knows what happened in that adventure and other people don't? And is Geordi going to at some point need this information to do some new adventure? Or yeah, exactly.
So, and no, it was just a costume mistake.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just so blatant. It's like, I can't believe they didn't catch that. I mean, they have so many people on the set. They have continuity people that are strictly, that's their whole job, is to make sure that everything has continuity to it. And people are looking the right way. And if they had their shirt unbuttoned, that they left it unbuttoned in all the scenes so it doesn't go button, you know, because the way they're filmed, and you can see this, my wife points it out all the time in TV series, where somebody's got a scarf on around the neck and then the scarf is gone and then it shows back up and then it's gone because they filmed it part of the scene without it and part of the scene with it. That kind of inconsistency happens, but this was pretty extreme. So anyway, and a bit of trivia you didn't expect to get, but yet you tune into our podcast and you get interesting stuff. Then let's just go for overall. So the overall impression is that this is, this is the best part of the entire Discovery run for you so far, close to it. For me, I'd probably say, looking back, just the impressive effects, the impressive impact of those first two episodes is still pretty hard for me to get by. Those first two episodes were pretty amazing of this series. We weren't into the characters yet, so you can't say much about the characters, but just the actual effects, I guess, really mean a lot to me in those first two episodes. I love the whole thing with Burnham in the brig and the place blows up and she's still protected by the force field around her in space, essentially, slides through. It was able to go through that and get back into the ship, and her talking to the computer and telling it to use its ethical programming to let her do this and not let her die is a very kind of a callback to Captain Kirk and things. So I love that whole piece. So to me, those two episodes were fantastic. Then the rest of the season is great, just not quite up to that caliber. And then all of a sudden, these episodes we're talking about now, to me, are of that caliber or even better. They're right. I'd have a hard time differentiating which I thought were better, the very first two episodes or these Mirror Universe episodes. But the Mirror Universe ones is not for effects. It's for character. It's for callbacks. It's for the fun of it, I would say, is higher. That's how I'd relate the two. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Does that make sense to you, Jim? I mean, yeah, Jim, whoever you are. No, Matt.
Matt? Yeah. Steve?
Yeah. Deacon Harry? What do you
Yeah, I mean these are certainly the two best episodes back to back here since the beginning. In the beginning, to me, it always felt like it was almost like those two episodes. You put those together as like the introductory movie or something that launches a series, and it's it was amazing. You know, it's you saw this original. You know, you see this crew in this first two episodes, and then suddenly there's nobody left, basically, except. Or the people that are brought back or that are still there. There's one that's Saru, who's important, and yes. The other characters that are still around are just there to give her dirty looks.
I can't remember on that first episode, on the first two episodes. I know that the auburn-haired bridge officer who after the first two episodes has her head kind of smashed or something thing, so yeah. She has this implant thing and they make a big deal about in the Mirror Universe she doesn't have that implant, she looks like she used to, but she also seems to have a higher rank or something because she wears kind of a different uniform than everybody else, but still is not featured too much. I mean, that's a frustration for me, and it's got to be a huge frustration for that actress to get so much screen time as far as reaction shots and so forth, but get almost, she's never on the away team. She's never on anything. And I always think, why not put her on an away team at least and give her a little more dialogue or something? Cause I think her character, it seems like it'd be kind of interesting to get to know, but we just do not get to know her at all. And then the question for me was the character, and I don't even know her name, but the one that is essentially looks like a robot or whatever and has lots of implant stuff going on, has the hockey helmet that she wears or whatever, is she on the original two or does she just show up in that third episode?
I thought she was in the background of the originals.
That's kind of what I thought too. I'm not sure.
And again, that's another character that's like nothing's been done with yet. So maybe they'll be I hope they're interesting in the future. I don't know.
Yeah. Because it's like, at least on the original Star Trek, yes, they had the core three that it was about, but they would have, well, for instance, we're going to talk about a little bit on Lower Decks, the Return of the Archons, and what I described to you, and I'll probably say this again on Lower Decks, is one of my favorite scenes in all of Star Trek, is because they always have trouble with both transporters and communications sometimes. And that episode starts with Sulu down on the planet and trying to get them to beam him up as these creatures are slowly walking towards him and that are going to do something to hurt him, obviously. And he's like, beam me up, beam me up. I need to beam up, emergency beam out, you know, or whatever. And they get him right before then he does the crackling thing and ends up beaming up. And that's just a little tiny character moment. They could have had that be, you know, I suppose Spock or somebody else, but they had it be Sulu. And it seems like that should be the sort of thing that her character, that some of these other characters should be doing, but they just don't do that kind of stuff. The away team is always basically Saru and Burnham, you know, and maybe an expendable person or something. But yeah, this series, It is the Saru, Burnham, Lorca, Stamets show, and Tilly, and that's it. Everybody else is essentially window dressing. That's there. I would say. Would you kind of agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly, I mean, there's a few other minor characters that I mean, you've got Ash has been a pretty big part of a lot of
things. Yeah, Ash too.
There's been a few characters that are kind of in the that you know there's an A tier of characters and then you drop to kind of a C tier of characters.
Yeah, without any perfectly said. No so, B's, just A to C. Boom. Yeah.
And then like you said, the other crew members that are basically part of the set.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's too bad for those actors. I mean, I do feel sorry for them because they obviously can act. They're obviously there. Yeah. Well, and then the problem is, you know, and this might be giving stuff away. I don't know, but I'll just go ahead and approach it anyway. Unfortunately, whenever we do get to know more, like the feature, well, for instance, the Doctor, how well did we know the Doctor? And when do we see the Doctor? I think the Doctor showed up, what, in the fourth or fifth episode, maybe? I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty background. And then we start to get him featured more in maybe two episodes or so before he dies. And that is something that this series, like other things, kind of do, where it's like, oh, this is an episode focused on so-and-so. Wow, we really are finding more about their back. Oh, they're dead. it's the Walking Dead thing, right? Walking Dead does that all the time.
And I was gonna—I mean, lots of shows do that because I was about to compare it to Game of Thrones, and okay. Game of Thrones had seven or eight seasons of characters. Yeah, it's happened at least once with the Doctor like that in this. But in Game of Thrones, I feel like they did that. It was all the time where it's like, oh, hey, here's a character you liked 3 years ago, and they're back suddenly. And now we're going to have an episode that they feature prominently in, and then next week we're going to kill them.
Yes. And it used to be, in the age of regular network television, that person would be keyed up in that one episode and they die at the end of the episode. Now, with streaming and everything, they'll key it up, really focus on that character for maybe an episode and a half, and then kill them, but it's the same concept. And I just think it's pretty funny that they still do that. And it makes you wish that they would go, okay, if we're going to kill this person off, why not feature them a little bit more instead of making it so obvious that, oh, look, they're a key person. And I will say they sometimes fool me. Sometimes I go, oh, great, they're going to be like the old Star Trek or whatever, and we're going to get to know more, or in Walking Dead, we're going to get to know more about this character. It's going to be one of the new major characters. And then they just feature it to make us care about that character before we kill them. And I just don't know. That's a trope that I don't love, that trope. And I don't know how to necessarily work around it. I certainly think it's better to do it that way than to take someone who's been a background character the whole time and just have them on the way team and have them all of a sudden get fried. And so we didn't ever know about that character. I mean, at least that actor gets like one more bite of the apple where they can really present part of their character in depth before they kill it. But it's just, I would rather, if they had that bite of the apple and we got to know more about the character and then kept the character, or do that, have an in-depth one about the character and then have the character be featured a little bit more and maybe kill them four or five episodes away. Not an episode and a half into it, but whatever.
Well, I feel like the Doctor certainly got more build up than people typically do in that situation, where they made it seem like, oh, this could be an ongoing.
Agreed. The Doctor was livable the way they did it, because you're right. It was it felt like it was like five episodes.
It was probably four or five episodes where he was a more.
And out of those four or five, there were probably two or three where he was, the relationship and everything was featured quite a bit, right? And so yeah, I mean, it certainly wasn't in all five episodes that he was, it was like, oh, they're all Doctor episodes, no, or he has a main B line or anything, but in a couple of those at least he had a solid B storyline. So anyway, I guess we should probably be done with this one. Are we cool?
That's yeah.
We covered it. Had that pretty well. I will say this: next week, another big reveal. Great episode. We get to see more of Michelle Yeoh and what she's going to do, and a great episode. So I can't wait to talk about that for next week. But we'll end this one there. And.